You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey everyone, John Wertheim here. It is this week's Sports Illustrated / Tennis Channel Tennis Podcast. The WTA Tour is wrapping up its season in Singapore. We have Venus Williams playing Ostapenko right now out of the corner of our eye. But we are talking today on the other side of the world, Jared Donaldson, 21-year-old American, just cracked the top 50. He is playing the Basel event and spent some time with us talking about this breakthrough year for him, what it's like to be at this stage in his career, playing perhaps, likely, in the ATP Next Gen Final in Milan in 2 weeks. Nice conversation, nice kid. We, again, are getting him in Basel, Switzerland. Stamina seems to be pretty good, 10 and a half months into the year. But Jamie Lasanti, why don't we bring him in right now, Jared Donaldson.
How are you?
I'm doing well. How about yourself?
No complaints. A little jet lag, but I suspect I don't get any sympathy from you on that one. How's Basel?
It's nice, you know, it's going well. Just week to week, it all kind of blends together, right?
I was going to say, where are you in the stamina department? This being late October, you've been at this a while.
Yeah, I have. But I feel as though, you know, in a normal job, there's not really time off. So in tennis, it's the same thing. You know what I mean? I mean, different circumstances that you travel a lot, but you just go in each day and you put in the work and then you go home, right?
I like to hear that.
The same thing with every profession.
Exactly. You most people get 2 weeks vacation. That's a good attitude. Have you been out? Have you explored the city? I mean, I don't know. We're doing this on a Tuesday, but for some reason, I think you're first on Wednesday. Is that right?
Am I first on? You know what? You apparently know more than I do because I didn't even know that the schedule is out for Wednesday yet. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. It's weird. On Sunday, I usually always play Monday, so I just figured I'd play Monday again or something.
Yeah, exactly.
And then it wasn't on the schedule for Monday, so then you figure, oh, I have to be on the schedule for Tuesday. It was on the schedule for Tuesday, so now here I am Tuesday afternoon and playing tomorrow, you know, first round. So.
Weird schedule. We will talk plenty about you, but I want to ask you, you're at it's like Roger Federer's hometown. Do you
yeah.
sense that? I mean, I don't. I mean, I know there's, you know, it would not be Swiss and it would not be Federer to have a big rocky monument in the middle of town. But do you feel like you're in Roger's hometown? I mean, do you have a sense that this is his territory?
You know, I mean, obviously, definitely, this is. Roger grew up here or lived here, so to speak. But you know, I guess I don't really think about that so much. I feel as though, you know, I kind of have my job to do here at this tournament and try to compete as well as I can do. And, I guess it makes things a little bit different that I don't play him. I think if I played him,
right,
I might have a little bit more of a sense of this is, you know, his home country of so forth and so forth, but because I don't really play him and,
you don't feel like you're at the Roger Federer Open.
No, I mean, not really. I think that, I mean, but with that being said, I feel that Roger's a celebrity at any tournament. He's always a crowd favorite. You know, he's beloved all around the world and for good reason. You know, he was my favorite player growing up. So, but I don't think that it's any more than at any other tournament.
Gotcha.
Really.
Yeah,
so to speak, you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I feel like this, like, could be like Springsteen playing New Jersey. On the other hand, this event, you know, he was a ball boy. This event, they didn't build this event on account of him. But anyway,
yeah.
Hey, congratulations. You are, you're officially a top 50 player. Well done.
Yeah, by the skin of my teeth, I guess.
Going to say, you're number 50 today, but
yeah,
that's great. Was that, is this a meaningful sort of signifier for you or just a number?
I think it's interesting. I think it's kind of interesting. I think it is just a number, but right now in my career, I think it is just a number. But I think if you take a step back, it definitely is, you know, a milestone, just like top 100 is, really. I think there's sort of maybe, once you get on the tour, there's maybe four milestones, I would guess, so to speak. There's top 100 for sure. That's always every player's, I think, first kind of ambition. Then top 50. I think another important, I don't know if this is a milestone as much as it is just a cool number to hit, top 32, where you could get seeded at the slams. I think that's an important number. Not sure if it's so much a milestone as it is an important number or a cool number to, or a cool thing to be seeded at a slam. And then obviously top 20, top 10. And then from there on, you know, I think any number inside the top 10 is amazing. You know, just go from 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2. You know, obviously number 1 and 2 carries an extra sort of weight, but I think any number you go on up inside the top 10 is, I would assume, would feel, awesome. And maybe one day I'll have that that opportunity. But I think right now just I still have to focus on the bigger picture of my career and focus on the things that I need to work on, so I can get opportunities to have better tournaments and get better ranking and continue to play well and hard for these last couple weeks of the season.
Finish strong. I'm glad you said that about seeding. I always thought that top 32 is underrated in the sense that when you go to a major, it's cool to be seeded, but also you're guaranteed not to play a higher ranked opponent till till round 3. So
it's huge.
Big difference.
It's huge.
I'll give you another one. You already achieved this one, but see, this is a trivia question. If I said top 125, what would you say?
I would assume you're talking about the pension.
Exactly. Very good.
Yes. But certainly that's obviously also cool to qualify for. I think any kind of little achievement you get in your career or, you know, and tennis is no different. It's just another accolade that you add to your resume, so forth. And I think that's obviously really cool that you can keep adding, different accolades to your resume. I remember being at somebody's house in Houston actually, and he was an investment banker, and he had all these trophies basically for all these shares he issued or deals he had done, and of different companies and so forth, and. And it's no different with tennis, where you collect trophies when you win events, or you might not collect trophies for ranking milestones, but it's still something that I think is really cool to look back on and reflect after your career and even during your career. But I think it has to be a little bit more tempered, because you don't want to get too wrapped up in that sort of stuff. You want to continue to focus on the things that will make you a better player and in your career.
What are the things that will make you a better player? We're 21 years old. Yeah. You're top 50. What are you working on?
I definitely think that that there's a lot of things. I think in tennis, especially at this level, and I guess in everything, maybe the margins become so small in tennis that everything is obviously really good for all these players, but it's just trying to get a little bit more out of each stroke. Maybe even a 5% improvement, a 2% improvement even could make a big difference. You know, if you improve 2% in every aspect of the game, that adds up to a lot, you know, and it could add up to maybe 10 points a match. And if you flip 10 points a match throughout the entire year, you could be talking about a really good year and a really good ranking.
What does that mean? 2%, like, sorry, what do you mean by, 5% or 2%? Is that pace? Is that consistency? Is that aiming for a target 5% smaller? What do you mean by that?
I definitely think that that's a good thing you brought, that interesting thing you brought up, because I think there are different aspects to each stroke, right? There's consistency. There's obviously pace of the shot, speed of the ball, heaviness, spin, location. And I think all those combined create your ball quality, right? I mean, if you just hit the ball really hard but you're not consistent, your ball quality is good, but it's also not – it's all because guys can put back, a lot of shots, even if it's a good ball quality. If you have good ball quality and you're consistent, but you don't have good accuracy. Well, guys are still good enough to move you and to put a lot of balls back in the court, and they're going to be able to move you and take offense against you. And then if you have all three, well, then you're talking about one of the best shots in the game, right? So so certainly if I can improve my forehand, I think the biggest thing for me still is working on taking the ball early on my forehand and my backhand, looking for those opportunities quicker. I think, you know, I had such a great experience playing Rafa in Shanghai. Even though I lost, I thought it was really apparent how motivated he was to take any little time away from me that he could. He was always looking for the short ball and playing aggressive, even on good shots that I hit. He was always looking to move the ball around, and he was hitting it aggressive with a lot of spin, and it was a big ball, you know. So I think that's something that I can obviously improve on both forehand and backhand. I think I can continue to get stronger. I think, I think that's something that I lack in compared to other players, maybe more so. So I think off court strength is key for me, and I also think. I think those are probably the three biggest ones. And then obviously, if I can just keep improving it, I want to improve every aspect of my game, though, you know.
How do you go from hey this is cool to, you know what, I belong here, to, you know, I'm taking names? I mean, how do you progress in terms of disposition now?
Yeah, I think there's two things. I think if you put in the work and the effort and the time, you kind of have a sense of confidence that you know that you belong. If you feel that you haven't, you might outwardly express that you belong and that you can compete at a certain level, but you also kind of know in your heart of hearts that maybe you haven't really been able to you haven't put in the effort and the work and so forth to compete. But So I think that that's number one, just making sure that you know that you've put in the time, that you're physically strong, that you've had good training, that you've had good practices, that you continue to work on things. I think that's key. But I also think that it's a little bit about the power of positive thinking. If you believe that you can, I think you can for certainly do it. If you don't believe that you can, well, then you have no shot. So I think no matter what situation you go into in tennis, whatever opponent you play, I think it's really important, at least for me, what I do is I always try to believe in myself and focus on the positive things that I do really well, and then try to exaggerate those in the course of a match. And you know, in between points, I always try to say I can do it, you know, you can do it, and so forth. And I think if you can, even if you believe that you're a big underdog, if you can trick your mind into think or trick yourself or even saying those things kind of reaffirms the fact that you know that you can play at a certain level. And I think that's key. If you believe, you can achieve. And I think that's really what it comes down to, where if you don't believe, I you know, I've gone into situations in certain matches where it's almost similar to playing with a lot of confidence. If you've played a lot of matches and you've won a lot of matches, every tennis player I've ever talked to, and it's no different with me, when you get into a close situation, you almost don't believe that you can lose. No matter how dire the situation is, you almost don't believe it. And then when it happens, you're a little bit surprised. But I think that's almost a good thing, because it shows that you're playing well and that you really believe in your ability to come back or to compete. And I think that's a key part of it.
No disrespect to Jill Krabus. Rhode Island, your home state, not usually seen as a tennis hotbed. What's your origin story? How did you get into this business?
Yeah, so definitely, and it's actually quite funny that both Rhode Islanders ended up in Southern Cal.
That's right. Yeah, yeah.
So a little side note, but you know, I was 4 years old, and my parents belonged to a country club, and my mom, for the summer, my mom would take my sister and I to the club every day. Basically, we would go to the pool, and then one day I just wandered over to the tennis courts and I started playing. And my mom, you know, saw that I took an interest in it, and then they started getting me lessons because they saw I had a knack for it and so forth. And you know, my parents just were super positive and gave me the best resources that they could provide to me, and I kept you know working hard and keep trying to do my best, and you know little by little I worked my way up, and here I am. So you know I think that's how I got started in tennis, and obviously I have my parents to thank a lot for you know pushing me and always believing in me and wanting me to achieve you know. Not necessarily be a professional tennis player, but just to do the best I could in whatever I was achieving.
What do your folks do?
My father owned a construction company, and my mom was a social worker.
Everyone I know from Rhode Island does a Peter Griffin imitation.
Go. I do not.
You're
I
on.
Do not
go.
Have that.
I'm thinking too. You probably don't mind indoor tennis then. I mean, your game is suited to it anyway, but. Indoor tennis, which you're playing this week, is probably something you're fairly familiar with.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, I grew up in Rhode Island. I grew up playing on indoor tennis, I'd say 6 months out of the year, if not a little bit more. So I think that's a little bit of an advantage. I know that I don't think it's something that you can train your entire life indoors, but I think I've had a good balance in my career, you know, playing a lot on clay, going to Argentina, so I've feel that I've experienced a lot of different surfaces, a lot of different styles, and certainly playing indoors is not a foreign experience to me. So I'm really excited to play and compete this week and also in Paris and looking forward to next year. I think it's an exciting time for me and for a lot of American tennis players.
You jumped from Paris to next year, but you are in the running. For the next gen event in Milan in November.
I am.
We are. Do you want me to tell you how close you are? I don't want to. You know. I don't want to violate.
I kind of have a rough idea of how close I am. Yeah, but you can tell me also.
Let's just say we are recording this on a Tuesday, and I will timestamp this because this might be an obsolete conversation. But that event is November 7th.
Yeah,
and I'm thinking that it's the first year they're doing it. It's age 21 and under. It would be obviously an honor to be in the field. At the same time, you can play company man here and tell me I'm wrong. If I'm Jared Donaldson and I'm being asked to fly across an ocean for a November event, and I'm you know thinking about next year, and I'm already in the top 50, is it an easy decision to play this? Or you get in, or are you thinking about? You know, maybe long term, I'm not sure this event meshes so well with my training and my long term plans.
Yeah. No, certainly if I make Milan, I'm going to go and play. There's no doubt about that. I didn't bring it up because I didn't want to sound as though I was
good man.
Overconfident that I was going to make it because, you know, I haven't made it. So it's not a sure thing by any stretch of the imagination. There's, you know, almost countless good young players now or right now at the game. And I feel as though there's between 15 and 20 players who really are playing well and deserve to make it.
21 and under we're talking.
So I think definitely if you look at the guys inside the top 10 or even the top 20, there's the level is so high. And, you know, if I make it, it's definitely, it'll be a lot of fun. It'll be really cool to compete against, you know, the next generation of players, but really against great tennis players that are already have really solidified themselves inside the top 100, top 50 even, and just great players that already in the sport. It'll be my first time, I think, playing, if I make it again, you know, it'll be my first time playing a lot of those players. And I think that it'll just be a lot of fun to compete against them and to see how everyone's game stacks up, because I don't, you know, as much as there's been a lot of talk about, you know, us, especially this year with the next gen finals, I don't think many of us have played each other a lot. I mean, I think that there have been a few instances of us playing, but correct me if I'm wrong, John, but I don't believe that there's been a whole lot of instances where, you know, they've played each other or we've played each other a multitude of times.
Right.
In tournament. So I think it'll be really fun to compete against a lot of these guys. And just, you know, that's what you want. You want to compete against the best and, you know, test your game against the best players that the sport has to offer, and figure out ways, figure out things that they do well, and figure out things you do well, and then try to go from there and keep improving your game.
So part of this event is to showcase the young players, and I think it's totally reasonable. But in the age of Federer, Nadal, and the Big Four, they've obviously taken a lot of the oxygen. So this is a way to showcase some of the younger players. But also, there are a number of innovations that are going to be tested out. Do you have strong feelings about any of these? I don't know. I mean, are you up to speed on some of the twists of this event?
Sure. I mean, so certainly. The rule changes have been highlighted, and it'll be interesting to see. One rule change that I think that I've heard from players, which I wasn't quite aware of, that I think could be modified or tweaked, was right now in ATP and tennis is the warm up. They think that the warm up could be more either better done or a different way to warm up,
right?
Because it seems a little awkward before the match and the TV and so forth. So I think that'll be the most interesting and probably the rule that maybe most likely will get changed in the future, I believe. One rule that I think is also interesting, but I also hope that it doesn't get changed to the tour is the automatic line calling. I think one thing that tennis has done, I think better than all sports, is the official review.
Right,
I don't think
right.
that there's a more well done official review in all of sports, because it's quick. It really engages the fans more than any review system in any sports, really. And I think that it adds a level of excitement. I know at least I know when I watch matches, I think the challenge is awesome. I think it adds, an awesome layer to tennis. It's not monotonous because each player only gets three a set, so it's almost a little bit strategic too. So I think that the challenge system is amazing for the sport of tennis. I think it adds a layer of intrigue to it.
You don't want to call your own lines, right?
So while I think that that sports are going more, not innovative, but I guess innovative would be kind of the word in terms of. Making sure the calls are better or more consistent. I think that's actually a rule that I hope doesn't get taken out. But I also think it'll be interesting to try all the rules. I know the no let on a serve has been discussed for a while.
How are you with that one?
Times.
You good with that one?
I'm sorry.
Are you good with that one?
Again, I've never really played without playing the let. I don't know how it will really shake out, how big of a deal it will really make. It's just, it's tough for me to really say when I haven't had a lot of experience with it. I mean, for me, I guess I kind of like the way tennis is played now, but I also understand that there are, you want to keep innovating to make sure that the game stays with the times and remains fresh and interesting. But I also think there's a point to where, when do you sacrifice your brand for it becoming a novelty, kind of?
Right.
So I think there's a delicate balance, but I also but there's no end to how you can improve a sport or such as tennis or any sport.
Good for you. Very open-minded. That's good for you. What's your is your coach with you?
My coach?
Yeah. You traveling with a coach in the fall?
Yes. Yeah. Jan Michael Gamble.
So you mentioned strength. I looked this up while you were talking. 6'2", 165. I always think of Jan Michael Gamble as a very solidly built player.
Yes.
Good fitness guy. 6'2", 165 seems a little maybe a little slight for Jan Michael Gamble. How are you going to bulk up? Is that mostly legs?
Yeah, I mean, I think certainly, as you mentioned, and or as I alluded to earlier, and you highlighted the fact that it's definitely going to be imperative that I get stronger, and I do travel with a full-time fitness trainer, so obviously that helps, But you know, at the end of the day, it's also tough to put in a lot of the physical strength on the road when you're playing a lot and you want to make sure you're not well rested, but you're 100% ready to go for matches and not sore or tired. And the year so long, I think that's why this off season is so important for me, because that's really a great time to work on strength. And I believe that I remember working last year with Gil Reyes, and obviously, you know, legendary figure in the sport of tennis, and sure, also in physical strength and conditioning. But he said, you want to make sure, and one thing, obviously, there's an endless number of things that he said that have stuck with me, but one that I think I can talk about in this context is that you want to make sure that when people see you next year, they say, oh man, you know, Jared looks different. Jared looks better in terms of not even talking about in terms of strength, but just he looks different. He's doing X, Y, Z different. He looks stronger. He looks tougher. Whatever it is, you know what I mean? So I think that's something that, you know, when people see me next year, there's an apparent difference in my game where I look better, I look stronger. So I think that's why, you know, the off season is such an exciting time for players, because that's a really great time to put in a lot of good work and get healthy for some and come back roaring for next year.
Talk a little bit more about Jan Mike, who I always thought, I mean, at first I'm like, this guy had a two-handed forehand and a two-handed backhand, mm-hmm. and his game didn't remind me of yours. But I also thought, here's a guy that, you know, he's from Spokane, well, he's from Eastern Washington, not unlike Rhode Island, not a tennis hotbed. And it sounds like mm-hmm. you guys sort of temperamentally, just hearing you speak, I could see you guys getting along. What does he bring to your game, and what's it like to have a coach who played in a style different from yours?
Yeah. I mean, I think that that Jan Michael obviously brings a lot, you know, a lot to my game and offers a lot to me on a daily basis. I think one thing that we've really focused on this year is, because I think it's also a fine balance between a coach and then the physical aspect, because while they go hand in hand, they're also separate times you have to allow for each. There's the off-court training and then the on-court training. I think Jan Michael is a big proponent and agrees with me that off-court training is something that's important, that's really important for me. But I also think on the court, we've made not major adjustments, but just good tweaks that have allowed me to improve, you know, getting lower on my ground strokes, making sure I'm always making sure I'm making the right decision, getting behind the ball better, changing direction when it's a smart decision, not just to change direction for the sake of it.
Right.
So working on my serve more, my return. Obviously, Jan Michael was a fearsome returner. I think all those things have really, you know, been magnified under Jan Michael, and I've been able to improve a lot under him. And I think that's great. And I think it's also very important that we work well together and that we see the game similar, because I think that no matter how great a coach is, if you don't get along with the person, or if you see certain things, not the same, it's going to be tough to come to a consensus regarding opinion. So I think I've been really lucky, you know, not only with Jan Michael, but throughout my entire career, that I've had positive people who really want me to succeed in not only in tennis, but in life as well.
All right, speed round. Quick answers.
Yes.
What is your favorite Farrelly Brothers movie?
My favorite what?
You know the Rhode Island Zone. What are they? The Farrelly Brothers, the Dumb and Dumber guys from Rhode Island.
Oh, I didn't even know that. Jeez, yeah. I don't think I've even seen one.
All right, forget it. You ever see Something About Mary? Something About Mary?
Talk to me about what? I'm sorry.
You've never seen Something About Mary? You got to.
I've never seen that either.
Oh man, as a Rhode Island resident, I will.
I apologize. My movie knowledge is quite scarce.
Oh man. All right. They will not let you home for Thanksgiving if you don't see Something About Mary. Where are you on the college regret scale?
You know, I think it's an interesting subject, and maybe it will never get solved. my thought process is that if you want to give yourself the best, well, I think it actually comes down to two arguments. A, I think it really depends on when it's time to make that decision, what your financial situation is, because obviously playing tennis is expensive, and if you don't have backing, you're not going to make money the first couple of years on tour, really. I mean, some players just shoot to the top, but I think if you're making a decision between, if it's on the borderline between college and professional, then you really can't expect to make money the first couple of years. You know what I mean?
Right.
I think, you know, even the first 4 years of tennis playing on tour is very similar to going to college for 4 years. You have to, in the traditional sense of you play professional tennis for 4 years and you learn for those 4 years, and then, you know, maybe year five you really have a lot of experience to know your game and know how you need to play and so forth. But I think number one, it's tough to do it the right way without a large, you know, financial investment. So I think depending on the financial situation for each player is different, but I think it's an important one when you make your decision. Number two, I think that also leads into the second part of the conversation, where if it depends what you want out of life. For me personally, I turned pro when I was 17, the week before the U.S. Open.
Right.
So almost 4 years ago. And my goal and my dream was always to be a professional tennis player. I was 17. I was going to be a senior in college. I was 300 in the world.
High school, right?
So, you know, I believed I was going to be a good player. But for me, you know, I really wanted to be a professional tennis player. It was my dream. It was my goal. And to realize a goal such as this is not an opportunity that presents you that life presents you every day. You know, some people never achieve the goal that they set forth. No matter how you know high or far I progressed in tennis, I, you know, could always say I went after my dream, and that's something that you can't really put a value to. In terms of developing your game, I think you develop your game much faster on the pro tour than you develop than you do in college. Because in college tennis, the goal is basically to win matches for your team, for yourself. And that's the same thing on the ATP World Tour. The only difference is that on the tour, the game is always getting better and people are always looking to improve. And sometimes those improvements can take years to develop. Where in college, you really have 4 years to win. You know, you can't be in college after four, or play, you know, sports after 4 years. So your time frame is a lot shorter. Just as I was talking about, you know, learning on the pro tour for 4 years, you are learning to improve. Where I feel like in college, you're learning to improve how to win matches and not so much your game. That's just the experience that I found with players going to college. With that being said, you know, it's not as though if you play pro tennis, you're going to be, you know, top 100, top 50, top 10, you know, that's no guarantee at all. And just the same is true with going to college. It's not as if you go to college, if your game's not quite mature enough to play on the pro tour, then you can't be a professional tennis player. That's not true. My point is I just think that if you look at the players if you want to give yourself the best chance,
I think
playing on the tour gives you the best chance. That's just my opinion. I know that look at Steve Johnson. He's been a very successful, you know, a very successful professional tennis player who went to college. So I'm not saying you can't do it either way you choose, but I am saying I think there is, you know, a path that gives you the best chance for success.
Right, right. And you know, you're obviously speaking from the perspective of someone who is doing quite well for himself, so it sounds
no
like
doubt.
You've been
no
validated.
Doubt.
Your
no
choice
doubt.
Has been validated. Who cuts your hair?
Cuts my hair? Oh my goodness! Why are we talking about the U.S. Open?
No, we. I'm looking at these photos here as well. You have a distinct haircut. Good for you. We applaud people who depart from convention But yes, well, I remember that the U.S. Open. Yeah, that's right. I didn't even think of that, but I remember your haircut at the U.S. Open.
Well, it's actually quite funny because people on Twitter were calling it the Peaky Blinders haircut, and that inspired my father to watch Peaky Blinders, and he really likes the show. So
see, that's a win right there.
So for that tournament, it was the stylist at the U.S. Open. You know, I went in one day, told him what I liked, and then he said, "Yeah, it looks great." I got a few catcalls from the women working in there, so I felt really good.
See, everyone goes home happy. All right, last question. What 2018 is a good year if what happens?
You know, I think that obviously you can always the easiest way to measure a good year is by ranking. However, I think that a good year, you can't, at the end of the day, you can't control ranking. I know that sounds kind of silly to say that, but I think it is true because I never go out there and try to lose a match. So if I could control my ranking through playing really well, I would be one in the world because I would win every match. You know what I mean?
Right.
So
right.
The things I can control is first and foremost improving my game. And I think if I improve my game, the ranking will come, the results will take care of themselves. And I'll be a better player. You know, I think at the beginning of the year, I maybe started a little bit slowly this year, but I felt I was always working on things and always improving. And even though maybe the results weren't what I wanted them to be, and it was maybe slightly disheartening, I always felt that I was moving in the right direction, and in the long term, that was going to pay off. And I think that it culminated really in the summer hardcourt season this year for me. I played really well. I gave myself opportunities, and I won matches, and I lost some close ones too. But that doesn't mean that if I change a few points or whatever, that I would be a worse player or better player. I'd be the same player, but my ranking might be a little bit different. So I think if I keep improving my game, I'll be a better player. And whether that materializes next year, at the beginning of next year, at the end of next year, or maybe the year after that, I think that's the most important thing to keep in mind. So I'll be a better player if I keep improving my game.
Having said that, I will say you have very little to defend for the next few months. So go make hay. But no, this was great. Thanks for the time. You're a career high number 50, and it looks like it's only going to go up from here. And again, people, by the time people listen to this, you may well be headed to Milan that second week of November. So good
Thank
on you for that
much.
One, too. Hey, thanks. That was great. I appreciate that.
No, I appreciate it very much. It was a lot of fun. Enjoyed it.
All right. We'll do it again. Good talking. Go win some more matches.
All right. I'm gonna try. That's the plan. I appreciate talking to you, John. It was a lot of fun.
Thanks, Jared. Take care.
All right. You too.
All right, that does it for this week. Thanks to our guest, Jared Donaldson. Jamie Lasanti, let's bring you in here. What struck you? Nice kid, huh?
Nice kid. He was good. He certainly has a lot of things to say. He's very well-spoken.
Can I make a confession? We're really torn by figures like this. He seems like eminently reasonable and cool and professional. Sometimes, journalistically, it can be a little more fun when it's Nick Kyrgios and... I think I wrote the other day. He's still at the eating ice cream for breakfast stage of his career and of life. That is not Jared Donaldson, but that guy really seems like someone who's composed and professional and has it together. Nice conversation. Interesting what he said. Not a lot of regrets for 21 years old. He did not express regrets that he could be doing upside down keg stands and enjoying the life of a college junior. Seems like he is full confidence in the decision he made to skip college tennis.
Seems like every decision he makes is just very thought out and cerebral. He was very, he had a good answer about anyone looking to play college tennis or to make a decision to go pro, that financials were a big part of it. So,
I did not sound like that on the week of my 21st birthday.
17th birthday, really.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Ooh, good. Look at it that way. All right, that does it for this week. We'll have another guest next week. Thanks, as always, to Jamie for her great work. Keep these suggestions coming. With the tennis season wrapping up, maybe we will have an easier time with logistics in terms of players. Anyway,
Thanks for listening, everyone. Feel free to leave a comment. You can subscribe to this podcast in iTunes, Stitcher, and whenever fine podcasts are sold. We'll do it again in 7 days. Have a good week, everyone.